This is HIV Management in Depth on thebodypro.com. I'm Miles Helfand. A major study published recently in the Annals of Internal Medicine has reinvigorated discussion about the link between cardiovascular disease and HIV. Not that the debate over the complex interplay between HIV and heart health had been dissipating. If anything, it's one of the hottest areas of HIV research, dovetailing with issues ranging from inflammation to senescence. What sets this new research apart, however, is the scope and sheer gravitas it brings. It's a solidly constructed cross-sectional investigation of roughly 1,000 participants in the storied Multicenter AIDS Cohort Study, or MACS for short. What's also notable about this research is the way in which its findings were quickly misinterpreted. To drill down into the data and tease out the real clinical implications, our research editor Warren Tong spoke by phone with David Wohl, an associate professor of medicine at the University of North Carolina School of Medicine and the co-director of HIV services at the North Carolina Department of Corrections.
Just to summarize a little bit, they went through the MAC study and pulled about 1,000 individuals, 600 HIV infected, 383 uninfected, and they found a higher risk of coronary artery disease in the patients living with HIV as opposed to the ones who were not.
Right. So I think that's important because some of the headlines have been characterizing the study as showing that there's more heart disease in people living with HIV than people without. In this case, when we're talking about people, we're talking about male people, not female people, because the MAX cohort is just men. And I think we have to be careful because what they're looking for is plaque. So plaque in the coronary arteries is atherosclerosis. It is not good for you, but many of us have plaque, especially as we get older. And about three-quarters of the men in MAX cohort, you know, these are HIV-positive men and HIV-negative men, all men who have sex with men, about three-quarters had plaque. So plaque is not abnormal. If you think about it as part of the normal aging process, we all get plaque eventually. So there is plaque. It doesn't necessarily mean that these people had, quote-unquote, heart disease. The thing that they did do that I think this makes a study really important and unique is that they looked for the different types of plaque. Previously, we've had studies that have been pretty small, rigorously done, but small. This study was rigorously done and had a lot of people. So I think there's some big take-home messages from this study because of those advantages compared to other studies that have been done.
Can you go over the different types of plaque that they were looking for? I know there was soft plaque.
Sure. There's concerns about plaque in general, but we've talked a lot about in the past calcified plaque. Those are plaques that are harder. There's calcium in them, and calcium, as we know, is a mineral that's in our bones. And when we do CT scans and look for calcium in the heart, we can see those plaques light up. And that's done, you know, not uncommonly in the general population. You get these CT calcium scores, and they've been used for a while to add more information about the propensity of people to have a heart attack above and beyond what we can get with an EKG or even a stress test. But there's other types of plaque that don't show up so well, and these are uncalcified or non-calcified plaques. And these are, like you said, softer. They're considered more vulnerable to rupture. And when they rupture, they send debris downward, just like a frozen river, and you know it starts to thaw. Some of that ice is going to go downstream, and if you start getting into the small tributaries, it can block flow, and that's what can happen in the heart. And when you block flow, muscle dies, in this case, heart muscle. So those are concerning. So what they were able to do is look at calcified plaque, uncalcified plaque or non-calcified plaque, and mixed plaque based upon how it looked on the imaging studies. So a subgroup of people actually did have calcium scores done from the larger group that you described, and they compared it from the HIV positive, HIV negative. So some big take-homes. One is even in this population of just gay men living in major metropolitan areas in the United States, there were differences between the HIV positive and HIV negative men just in their general characteristics. So people generally think that the MAX cohort is homogeneous. It isn't. So even in this cohort that's refined, if you will, to a certain sort of group of people, being HIV positive carried with it additional risk factors for cardiovascular disease that had to be adjusted for. So it's not like you just enroll men or sex men in these areas and the HIV positive and HIV negative are going to be the same. Being HIV positive is often associated with other risk factors for cardiovascular disease, lifestyle risk factors. So that's one thing that I think is important. It's better, it's closer than in a lot of other studies, but there are still differences that had to be adjusted for, which is fascinating to me, because I do think people with HIV generally have had different types of lives, oftentimes, not everybody, but oftentimes, compared to HIV-negative people. But going to the data itself, after adjusting for those factors, what we saw was that the uncalcified plaque, not the calcified, the uncalcified plaque, there was a difference where you were more likely to have uncalcified plaque, which we said may be more vulnerable to rupture if you were HIV positive. So, you know, on the order, it's not double the risk, but somewhere between, you know, a little over one and a half, about one and a half times the risk of having vulnerable plaque versus if you're HIV positive versus HIV negative. But there were other factors that when you start adjusting for cardiovascular risk and demographics, became less significant, borderline significant is what they said, and that's the calcified plaque or plaque overall. So yeah, there's clearly a signal. Fascinating to me, however, Warren, was that when you look at where the plaque occurred as far as the age spectrum, what we saw was a really interesting pattern where for the HIV negative men, over time, they started to get more and more calcified plaque and less of the non-calcified plaque. Whereas for HIV-positive men, you started to see a difference where the calcification was less likely to occur later on in age, but the vulnerable non-calcified increased. So really, there were differences that you can see throughout the age spectrum, but they were really more profound for people 65 and older, HIV-positive versus HIV-negative. And I think that probably drove a lot of the statistical difference between the groups. So putting that into more simple words, what it means is that the difference that was seen between HIV-positive men and HIV-negative men, as far as these non-calcified vulnerable plaques, quote-unquote, was more profound in men who are 65 and above, and was driven largely by the decrease in vulnerable plaques that we saw in the HIV-negative, while we saw this increase in HIV-positive. And we have one group that's going down and one group that's going up, that leads to a bigger chance of finding a significant difference than if one group stayed stable and the other one changed.
So for patients who are actually growing older with HIV, is this something that they should be worried about, or is the risk not as significant as the headlines might make them seem?
Well, I think that the risk here has to be put in perspective. Again, plaques were pretty common here. You know, there was a lot of lifestyle factors that were accounted for, but they couldn't account for everything. So we don't know that the HIV-positive men are bearing increased burden of these vulnerable plaques strictly because they're HIV-positive. We don't know that. There's a signal for that. But, you know, cocaine use wasn't looked at, and I don't know what cocaine does to creating vulnerable plaques versus calcified plaques. You know, there's other things that you just, it's very hard to measure, and that's been my mantra almost to the point of annoyance of you can't correct for a lot of these other things because they're not measured, and we don't know what the effects are. So is there an effect of HIV itself? There may be a whole inflammation thing that may tie into this, but you know, it wasn't such a huge, profound difference. The difference was seen in much older men than middle-aged and younger men. And I think there's more that has to be done. It's certainly important. What can men do? You said worry. That's the one thing they shouldn't do. And I worry about studies like this that contribute and heap on to worry. You know, you can only change the things you can change, and you can't change the things you can't change. So change the things you can change. So what can you change? Many of the people who are listening to this are already doing it. They're exercising. They don't smoke. They don't smoke marijuana. Again, not measured in the study. They don't do cocaine. They eat fairly healthy diets. Those are the types of things any of us have to do. And I have to believe that that helps ameliorate some of the excess risk that may, capital M-A-Y, may be related to living with HIV. There are studies at a big HIV conference we went to just about a month ago that showed that exercise does seem to be beneficial. They want great studies, but it can't hurt you. So I don't think that this would change me from doing anything else that I do when I talk to patients about living a healthy lifestyle. You can't get rid of the HIV right now, and until we do, there's nothing else I think you can do than just the normal things that we all have to do to try to prevent ourselves from having any plaque in our heart, let alone vulnerable plaque.
What about the two results that they found with lower CD4 counts and people who have been on treatment longer being associated with the higher risk?
associations with low CD4 cell count and being on therapy longer, those are also markers for being older and living with HIV a longer period of time and being infected longer ago. So again, it's hard to tease those out from the effects of, you know, if you're 25 years old, you haven't been alive long enough to be someone who's had HIV for 30 years. But if you're 68 years old, you certainly could be someone who's been living with. So it's a marker for age. It's a marker for drug exposure. It's a marker for being around when, you know, you were doing crack cocaine or you were doing powder cocaine or you were living a hard life. So again, I'm talking in general terms because we're talking about a large data set here. But I think we have to be careful about some of these associations, but it does play into this idea that low CD4 cell count, prolonged HIV infection, increases exposure to inflammation over a longer period of time. Inflammation has been associated with atherosclerotic disease and other end organ diseases. So I buy it. I mean, if you drink the Kool-Aid on this one and say that there is this axis of evil of immune activation, of inflammation, and then end organ disease. Again, I think that's part of it. I just don't understand completely how big a part of it. A study, again, helps us understand that there are differences between HIV positive and HIV negative. But I am impressed by how the difference is modest. It wasn't like you had 3, 4, 5, 10 times the risk of these bad plaques if you were HIV positive. But I do think it's important to pay attention to this and try to find out pathologically what's going on here.
As a provider, what would you say to a patient who's already on the fence about starting treatment and sees a study like this and just decides not to start treatment as early as they should?
I think people who are infected and don't want to start treatment are crazy unless they have a fantastically good reason not to start therapy. Like, you know, it's going to cost them $1,500 a month. And then it becomes my problem because then I have to figure out how to get them their medicines. But you know, there's no reason. The only reason I could see that you don't start medicines is you're an elite controller and your viral load is undetectable and your T-cell count is 900 or your T-cell count's higher than mine. Then we can have a conversation. And as you get closer and closer to that, I understand more of your ambivalence. So if you have a T-cell count, you know, that's 1,000 and your viral load is 500, I could still maybe be talked into having a debate about it. But I am a strong believer that if you're infected, you should be on therapy, that the benefits of therapy outweigh their risks. And again, this inflammation that we see, the problems that we see with ongoing HIV replication in end organs is not a good thing, and we should treat it. If I was infected and I had a CD4 cell count of 1,000 and a viral load of 30,000, I would start on HIV medicine.
And for other providers, how do they continue to monitor this or make sure that the risk is not as high?
Well, you know, I think we don't do anything different right now, and I don't think that the authors would suggest we do anything different right now clinically. And you hear that a lot in studies, and that's because you have to be careful because you don't want to extrapolate too far. So I think right here now, I think what I would do is the typical things I do. I risk stratify as far as cardiovascular disease. I change the things that could be changed, and the things that can't be changed, we have to figure out more about. So, you know, do we try to use anti-inflammatories? Do we try to use statins? Do we give more aspirin than we should? Those are the types of things that are being studied, but they're not, you know, innocuous. So right now I do the usual stuff, and for the majority of my patients, there are levers I can pull that work that have nothing to do with how much CRP they have or IL-6. These are inflammatory markers. It has to do with cutting down on their smoking. It has to do with losing weight. It has to do with eating less French fries and cookies and soft drinks. Now, there are some people who are great, and, you know, these are the people that I feel for who they're doing everything right, and they're really worried. You know, their cholesterol is good. They need to understand. They exercise. They look great, and they're like, do I carry excess risk because of my HIV infection? And for those people, I say, you know, I'm hand-wringing. I'm not sure. The data suggests somewhat. I mean, you're doing everything you can to reduce your risk. But look, you know, we all carry different risks, right, because of our genetics. So if you carry a gene that protects you against heart disease, but I carry a gene that gives me a propensity to heart disease, like my dad's had, you know, stents placed in his heart. So if I carry that gene, we're starting already with an uneven playing field. So that happens all the time in life. And maybe HIV is like that gene. It gives you another hit, another risk. And maybe one that we can't change, just like we can't change our genes. Some of my patients get really excited about this. that they've carried this excess risk and they're basically going to spontaneously combust to cool our jets. It's not going to happen. That's not what's happening. And very, very few people actually go on and get heart attacks who are HIV positive. The DAD cohort presented really nice updated data. And when you look at the numbers of people who've been followed in that cohort in Europe and, you know, the time that they've been followed and the number of actual heart attacks they've been able to document, it is such a small, small number. So relative risk may go up, but absolute risk remains low. So we're talking about taking a rare event and making it somewhat less rare, but it's still a rare event.
Well said. How do these results impact the people who weren't included, the younger people living with HIV or the women?
That's a great question. So I think younger people have natural protection, and we should be happy about that. So there's lots of things that go on with them. So we don't worry as much. The groundwork, I'm sure cardiologists would say, well, wait a second, the groundwork for some of these plaques and stuff like that happens early on. So those people are not exempt from practicing healthy lifestyles. You know, you do damage early on that's hard to reverse or maybe irreversible. So we want to keep a healthy lifestyle from an early age. For women, the story may be different, and women are very hard to compare when you talk about HIV positive and HIV negative because there's a bunch of factors. Most women with HIV are African American or women of color. So then when you start looking at HIV negative controls, if they're more white, you know, you've got to adjust for that. With color and with race comes a bunch of different confounders that we have to adjust for. And I could go long into that, whether they be lifestyle or community or living with stress and PTSD and discrimination. There's a whole body of literature that can be brought into that. But even so, there are some data that really do suggest women may be more at risk for cardiovascular disease with HIV compared to HIV negative women. Again, those studies are really hard to do. We're trying to get a better handle on it. But women have to pay attention to this too, maybe even more so than men, is what some of the data seem to be suggesting.
Thank you very much for your time. If there's anything you want to add or any main takeaways that you wanted to include, please feel free.
Yeah, no, I think this is a great topic. I think this is a really good study. It gets us incrementally closer to where we want to be to understand this. It was really well done, and it's important. But even, I think the investigators would say there's caveats here. We have to understand more about this. And I just caution my patients not to overinterpret these data just yet.
Okay. I hope everyone keeps that in mind. Thank you very much.
Thank you.